a young woman named Jen was having some building work done in her house. One night, she was laying there awake, couldn't fall asleep, and then she sees a woman in a bonnet, like a Little House on the Prairie bonnet, appear through her wall. The woman walks slowly across the room, and Jen was in complete shock. She rolls over, trying to wake up her husband, who is sound asleep, and he's not waking up. And then she sees the woman return in the direction that she had come from. So Jen starts yelling at her husband, and you know she's super freaked out at this point. And then the ghostly figure turns toward her, puts her fingers on her lips, and shushes her. And then she promptly disappeared back through the wall. Jen hides under her covers for the rest of the night. And then the next day, one of the construction workers who's working on her house called her to something called an old airing cupboard. And that's what where they were working that day. And when she goes there, she sees the construction worker holding up a lady's bonnet that they found underneath the floorboards in the airing cupboard. It was the exact bonnet that the Little House on the Prairie lady was wearing when she walked through the wall. On the other side of that bedroom wall is that airing cupboard. Luckily, Jen never saw that woman in the bonnet again, presumably because her unfinished business had been finished. She found her missing bonnet. And now she can rest in peace in her complete outfit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Weird World Podcast. It is our continuing Hollow Weird World 2024. Today is going to be Carrie's doing it. This is going to be a little more sciencey than scary, maybe, but it's still actually, I've been thinking about this. Every culture, every society known to humankind has some sense of ghost, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And so when ghosts are very visual, like yours was the one you just told here as the tease was partly visual, but when ghosts are in the form of just the feeling that I'm not alone in this room, that something's here with me, when ghosts take that form, science may have figured out a reason why that's so universal is because it's part of the human condition, not part of a cultural thing, maybe. So that's what Carrie's going to talk about today.
Correct. I tend to think there are scientific ghost and logical explanations for every supposed paranormal thing that happens.
Hmm.
But for example, Jen's story, what could it be?
It's either a hallucination or she made it up or... If it's a ghost. See, that's a visual, though.
Correct.
So that's not, you're mostly going to be talking about something where there's not a visual, am I right? Or is there sometimes a
visual? For the most part, yes. And if it's me talking to my friend, I'm like, you were having a dream or something like that. If it's me, though, and I'm experiencing it and I'm positive I'm awake and whatever, then.
Yeah. But you've never had a hypnagogic or hypnopompic dream, right?
I never have.
I thought you said you never have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you have. Okay.
The witch.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and you were absolutely positive you were not dreaming. That's the innate nature of sleep paralysis that you...
Oh, I'm positive now I was dreaming.
Okay.
But at the time, no, absolutely not. I was experiencing it. I was standing up.
Yeah.
I felt it physically.
Yeah.
And, you know...
So, which is one dominant scientific explanation for ghost... And things like that. But this is what you're going to talk about is another.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that called?
It is called sensed presence.
And sometimes also called felt presence, I believe, as well.
You might have seen it under like feeling of presence or something like that.
Is I think just felt presence.
FOP.
Yeah. And are you going to use more super topical references like Little House on the Prairie to illustrate some of these things? From the
Everybody knows Little House on the Prairie.
You think? Well, we'll see. Okay. So go ahead.
Well, here's one, because now that you talk about sleep paralysis, I'm going to tell you another little story right here.
Okay.
I'm going to read it. It's first person, so it's somebody's account. Her name is Heidi Love, and this was published in Skeptic, and this is her personal experience. I wake up with a start, feel that I'm paralyzed, feel this sort of tingly, vibrating energy coursing through my body. I feel like I'm sort of sinking or falling backwards, like down into a giant bowl of warm, tingly oatmeal. Rhythmic sensations of vibrations, electricity all over my body or all over my skin and throughout my entire body. This comes also with a sound, a roar, a rush. I feel fear. I try to move but can't. It's hard to breathe. It's hard to lift my chest or to fill my lungs with air. I can open my eyes just a slit so I can see everything in my room. I noticed a huge, bulky figure in the doorway coming toward me. It's a dark silhouette of something that kind of looks like a giant, broad-shouldered ape. It's a monster or a demon of some sort. I can't see a face, just an outline filled in with total darkness against the bright white light of my room and the doorway. It is totally aware of me and wants to do me harm. Yeah. It is coming toward me, and I am paralyzed and totally terrified. Struggling for breath, I panic and strain hard, directing all of my energy to try to move just one little finger. And finally, I do. I move a finger, and the spell is broken. I, quote-unquote, wake up all the way. I feel groggy and drugged and hot, and I am alone in my bedroom.
That is a perfect sleep paralysis episode, including, I know we've talked about ours on this on the program before, but I remember the desperate need to open my eyes when I was at that foreboding person at the foot of my bed and was for sure felt threatened, absolutely, you know, physically. I mean, that's, I'm going to get murdered, but I can't move. I couldn't move any muscle. And I just, if I can just open my eyes, absolutely can't open your eyes. You absolutely can't move a muscle. You're literally paralyzed. So that's terrifying.
But also hers is sleep paralysis, obviously. But it's also visual. She sees
it.
Kind of a dark presence coming toward her, right? But there's also, you could call them ghostly presences, just the feeling of someone near you when you know there's no one there. And this could, they think, be your brain trying to make sense of conflicting information. And scientists have now believed that they have discovered which regions of the brain are involved in creating such pretty much hallucinations.
Is this different? Is this what explains the hallucinations found in sleep paralysis, or is it something different? It's just, this is just, they can explain now why you have that feeling if someone's in the room with me.
I think both. Okay. I mean, I think obviously, I think sleep paralysis has been explained for a while.
It has.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they, well, maybe they have. I don't know if they've found, you know, the parts of the brain being activated while people are undergoing it, because it's super uncommon. It seems like it'd be hard to study. Sleep paralysis is incredible. It's very, very uncommon. I've had it twice in my entire life. I think you've once or twice. Jack, never. So it's
no, I think it's pretty common.
A common people, but not common once or twice in your life is what.
Oh,
that's super uncommon.
Yeah.
It's, to study that
would be difficult.
Would be incredibly difficult. Okay, well, it's just, no, you're going to sleep here for, I don't know, 10 or 20 years until you have a sleep paralysis episode, and hopefully we'll catch it.
Yeah.
That's, but why you're up?
Well, this thing that we're talking about, just the feeling of another presence near you that you can't see, you just can kind of sense it. They have been studying that, and they've even figured out a way to induce it in healthy people. And so this kind of explains why people with certain conditions are more likely to experience this, like schizophrenia, epilepsy. Those people report feeling like an alien presence near them.
So not a, I mean, different from a ghostly presence. I mean, they make that distinction themselves. Because, you mean alien like literally extraterrestrials, or do you mean just something, an other presence?
You know what? I don't know. I guess you could read it either way.
Okay.
That thing, whether it's an alien or a ghost or something else, is cultural.
Okay, yeah, an angel.
Yeah.
You can see whatever your cultural take on that is going to change what the actual, how you interpret it. So that's why they call it sense presence. It's a presence.
Yep.
It's very generic. Your culture and your outlook, you turn it into whatever you turn it into.
Yes.
Angel or demon.
Yeah. And this could also explain, for instance, why mountain climbers often report being accompanied by the presence of what has been called the third man.
Yeah. Is that what, hypoxia or Is there a reason why specific to mountain climbers? And I think also
yes.
hardcore explorers and adventurers in extreme situations.
Uh-huh. Like you said, extreme situation, lack of oxygen when you're a mountain climber,
yeah.
dehydration, lack of sleep, being very, very tired. Is also one. So, for instance, in 1933, British explorer Frank Smythe, or Smith, I don't know.
Smith, I believe was his
name. Came close to conquering Mount Everest all by himself.
Wow. What year?
33. Oh. But he had this persistent feeling that somebody else was climbing with him, but he was all by himself.
It was the 11 Sherpas. He didn't consider them human, so he was very confused.
He was alone. He had a team with him, but he had left them behind.
Leg or whatever. He's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they all died. I don't know. But anyway, he was, well, they're all frozen back then.
No care. Oh my God. No, we didn't know about the mass die-off of 11 Sherpas. I made the number.
No, not Sherpas.
He probably
other
was just
climbers, going other people you know, in his team.
Scaling ahead of them, maybe. Or actually, he's probably way behind all of them. So he's like trying to catch up. But go ahead.
No, he left them behind. Okay. But also, here's the thing. I have zero sympathy about anybody who decides to climb Mount Everest, and we can chuckle about them being popsicles up on that.
I'm not going to, but you go ahead and be a monster.
It's 100% their choice, their decision.
Okay. I'm still not going to chuckle about it.
Well, as he's climbing all by himself, he even breaks off a piece of his cake that he's eating and offers it to his invisible
Did he see it chewed and then go climber. Down at the throat? Be like the Invisible Man thing?
No.
No, okay.
Well, guess who else experienced this?
Ernest Shackleton. I cheated.
Charles Lindbergh.
That makes sense.
You didn't cheat well enough, Dean.
I didn't. That does make sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes. During his first solo nonstop transatlantic flight in 1927, he was flying just above the ocean and really having a hard time staying awake, which,
yeah,
honestly, me too.
He was on some amphetamines.
Well, maybe he needed to take some more, but 22 hours into this trip, he becomes aware of some like vague forms behind him. I don't know.
In the plane or?
In the plane.
Okay.
In the plane. But these invisible co-pilots were there to help him. They were offering him reassurance, and they were even discussing navigational problems.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And coffee. Lots of coffee.
They stayed with him in the plane.
Did he wear a diaper?
I don't know. Go ahead, sir. Until he spotted the Irish coast, and then I guess he was going to Paris, right? Paris was within reach. And that was it.
I thought he felt that the presence with him was a young Adolf Hitler. But I guess I'm mistaken.
Might have been. Was Hitler a pilot? He probably wouldn't have been much help.
No, Lindbergh was a Nazi.
yes, I know that. Okay. So this...
He was an artist, though. Hitler.
Yeah. This is also called, like you said, feeling of presence. And it's different from other hallucinations involving your body, because a lot of times you have out-of-body experiences, yes. Like you feel like you're astral projecting and stuff like that, or you're outside of your body looking at it, like people say near death, or like people during surgery and stuff, they witness their own surgery.
There's a part of the brain now they think they've traced that to?
Mm-hmm. Or even the doppelganger effect, where you see and interact with your double, somebody who looks exactly like you.
Really?
So, mm-hmm.
Okay.
But those things are not the case with feeling of presence or the sensed presence. It's more kind of mystical because... There's
something
tangible. Okay. Yes. You just feel it.
At the barest form, to the degree they can disentangle it from those cultural layers that we apply to that sense presence, is the sense presence good, bad, indifferent? Is it just there's something, entity here with me? And then you know what I mean? At the barest form, the initial form, before you start adding cultural layers to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it would be all individual. Like if I'm laying, because this is where I've had this feeling. I'm lying in bed and you're probably out of town. So I'm all alone and I just feel like something's there with me in the room. I can't see it. I can't hear it. But you know how, like, when somebody walks in the room, you just, you can just kind of sense it.
Yeah.
Even if your eyes are closed, somebody walks in the room, you can sense it, even if you don't hear them.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I definitely know that. Although you probably are hearing them and not picking up.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wonder, in that situation,
in a real situation when someone really does walk in the room, you probably are hearing them, you just don't realize it.
Yeah. But in that situation, I am laying there scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid.
So it's scary. It's
very scary. Okay. I'm afraid to move. I'm being very quiet. I'm not worried that it's a ghost. I'm worried that it's an intruder or
and
something.
And so being, playing possum for intruder, probably not a good strategy.
Well, that's what I've done.
Okay. And you know what? It's worked so
it
far.
It did work out.
And all those not intruders who have not been in rooms with you.
And then I'm sure eventually I just fall asleep or whatever.
Hmm. So do you think that could be a form of hypnopompic? I don't know the one where you're going to sleep.
Hypnagogic.
Yeah, whatever.
Could that be
something like that? Because you are... You might be more asleep than you think you are, in other words.
That's possible.
In the process of falling asleep, and this sense presence is a form of that.
Yeah, but I don't think so.
Okay.
But
you had a sense presence where you're awake, weren't on the verge of sleep, and didn't go to sleep, weren't in, you know what I mean?
Not that I can think of.
So this is sounding a little bit like a hypnopompic thing, because you're always...
I can only think of it in terms of laying in bed.
Being asleep,
Or
going to sleep. So that seems...
So maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But most folks, the phenomenon we're talking about is experience divorced from sleep, correct? Brought middle of the day, that can, right?
It can, yeah. It can happen at all times of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think a common thread, though, is some sort of stressor, the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you go on Reddit and there's a million people who... have these stories. They all connect it to real ghosts and paranormal
stuff. I would love to hear a story right now of what the presence felt like to someone. Do you have any of those? Can you say one now? Someone describing what the sense presence felt like.
No.
You don't have any?
You can't really describe that.
Well, sure you can. No one's done that?
Mm-mm.
I bet I can go online and find one in 10 minutes.
Well, I mean...
Go ahead.
So scientists have been studying this, and... this one group studied 12 people with epilepsy and other sensory motor issues who all had said they have felt a presence nearby. And so these are the brain areas, Dean, that you were asking about.
Yeah.
Because there's damage in three brain regions, the temporoparietal junction called the TPJ, the insula, and the frontal parietal cortex. So in previous studies, they had linked the temporal parietal junction, the TPJ, with out-of-body experiences, and the insula part of the brain with the doppelganger hallucination. So, they can literally pinpoint different hallucinations to different parts of the brain, damage in different parts of the brain. These brain regions integrate sensory signals from outside and inside of the body to create like the sense of yourself in your body, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So in an out-of-body experience and other things, the integration of those signals is compromised somehow, and that leads to a hallucination. So the new studies on the feeling of presence involves disruptions not just to the integration of the external and internal sensations in these parts of the brains, but also signals related to movement. And that's the frontal parietal cortex. So if you think about it, that kind of makes sense. Your sense of movement,
Your sense of movement is sensing something moving. Are sense presences usually the feeling that they're moving around you? Or could they just be, like you said, I think one of those, the mountain climbers feel like they're climbing with them,
kind
of climbing next to them, so they're moving next to them.
Mm-hmm.
Do most people feel like that, or do they feel like it could just be sitting there next to you or something like that?
I
know it's not moving if it is connected to your sense of movement. So,
I think both.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes they're just there. They're in the room.
Okay.
So here is an interesting little experiment, and this is kind of how they figure this out. It's a little bit weird how it's not absolutely clear how this translates to the feeling of presence, but the people experiencing it, that's exactly how they describe it. So it's a master and slave robot experiment.
Oh.
So the volunteers are blindfolded, so they can't see anything. Mm-hmm. And they are like just like in this little sciency room, and they're asked to move an arm of a robot. It's called the master robot with uh-huh. one hand. So think of it like they're holding almost like a little joystick.
Yeah.
You know, sideways. Mm-hmm. And if they move that little joystick when they're, and they're only to use one hand, there's a slave robot behind them. So they're moving the hand of the master robot. The slave robot behind them, think of it as like a little robot finger.
Mm-hmm.
And they're causing it to move when they move the joystick. And that slave robot finger is then poking their back.
Oh.
So like, have you ever played the letter game?
Yeah.
Where you write on somebody's back with yeah. your finger. So think it looks like that.
Okay.
So I'm making little movements with the joystick. And
is the master, can you see? Oh, I guess they can't see.
They can't see anything.
There's a master robot, and there really is a robot behind them. Is there not really even really a master robot though? That they're actually moving through the joystick?
Yeah, there is.
Oh, there is. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they just can't see it. Okay.
Yeah, they can't see it. Obviously, in your brain, you know, I'm mm-hmm. drawing a heart with this yeah. thing, and a heart is being drawn on my back. Yeah. So you can feel that, and so you know what's happening. And they also get some sort of little pressure in their finger. So it also feels like they're, or in their hand. You know, there is tactile feedback. Mm-hmm. When they're moving the joystick. So it feels to them like, oh, I'm poking
myself,
my back. Yeah, yeah my own yeah. back. So it applies force and they can feel it. So that's interesting. Great. They make, you know, their brains make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they put a little delay into the slave robot, 500 milliseconds.
Really?
So not a huge delay, just yeah. a slight little delay.
It's a very slight delay.
So that the person's hand movement is just slightly out of sync with yeah. the finger in their back, the robot finger in their back. 5 out of 17 people just spontaneously reported feeling a presence behind them.
Really? That's 29.4%.
Yes. Not huge numbers.
That's
but,
a pretty big number.
But yeah. And they were never even asked about it. This is just how
really?
They reported that this made them feel.
Like someone is poking their back.
I sense some, yeah, a presence behind me.
Did they
me.
Know there is going to be a slave robot behind them poking their back?
They're I don't know.
Huh. Otherwise, it'd be freaky if they think they're moving a master robot in front of them. Suddenly, they're being
yeah.
traced their back. As they must have known. You would, but, the slave robot.
But mind. Even so, as soon as it happens, it's yeah. clear I'm doing this.
I'm doing this. This is, yeah. this is weirdly delayed.
Mm-hmm.
So they started feeling a sense presence.
Yes.
You've activated the part of their brain that has to do with motion and tactile feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, that so that same part of the brain also just sort of coincidentally almost governs this feeling of sense presence.
Right. Mm. So then when they take away the... like the feeling of pressure, like the feedback from mm-hmm. the hand that's actually moving the master robot.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's just like I'm just
moving okay.
moving this joystick, but I don't. There's no feedback back. Okay. Then that more consistently induced the feeling of presence behind the volunteers. Now, so there's before it said there were 17, 5 out of 17. Now there's 19 subjects.
Okay.
14 of them. Reported a stronger feeling of some kind of presence behind them when it was out of sync. You know, there was a slight delay.
Okay. So there's some disruption in the part of your brain that, like you said, senses motion, senses presence, you know, has real tactile sense.
Mm-hmm.
If that feels out of whack to you.
Yeah. Like I'm not doing this because I don't, it doesn't feel like I'm doing this.
So does that mean the sense presence is kind of you, but you're disassociated with yourself?
Could be.
It's probably yourself.
Yeah.
That you're feeling.
But so
that's why they're climbing a mountain next to you. You're climbing. Are they?
Uh-huh.
Have sense presence. Yes. I'm sitting down. It's sitting down. Have they ever like you've been sitting down and your sense presence is walking around the room or something doing something very very different than you're doing physically? Have you run across any story like that? Or are they always doing something similar to what the person is doing?
Yeah. No. I think there are some where they're doing something very different.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So Well, here's what they say. The brain, confounded by the mismatch between internal bodily signals related to the movements of their arms and then the out-of-sync sensation of the touch on their back, kind of, that's what the volunteers attribute the touch to belonging to somebody else. Mm. Somebody else must be standing behind me doing this. Everybody's, it's not me. Okay. In fact,
because it's disconnected in time.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Slightly.
One volunteer said, there must be a monkey behind me or something like that doing this. Why a monkey? I don't know. But that's what they thought. So then they started thinking, well, maybe this disintegration of the signals in your brain is what's kind of behind the third man syndrome. Mm-hmm. That they have heard the stories of like mountain climbers and stuff experiencing. Because they said it usually happens above altitudes of 600 meters under conditions of extreme fatigue, oxygen deprivation, and possibly sensory deprivation when you're in like whiteout conditions with snow and wind and everything looks white or gray or whatever to you. And you don't see anything. You don't see other people. You don't see animals. You don't really see colors. And so that really kind of does a number on your brain and your sensory perception of stuff. And then it makes you more prone to like an altered state of consciousness. Mm. And that then also the physical fatigue I'm sure you're experiencing when you're in that kind of situation. And then it's just like, the potential that you're going to experience something like this is really increased. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it seems like there's a lot of reports of mountain climbers experiencing this. That
ours is like the cool thing to talk about. And if you haven't experienced it as a mountain climber, it's like, well, I guess you're not really a mountain. So everybody just sort of, no, oh yeah, no, I did. I did like twice.
Okay. So that robot experiment also shows that this perception of another physical presence happens when people have a disturbed sense of agency, right? Like I'm doing it, then it feels like I'm not doing it, so it must be somebody else kind of thing. That the feeling that they're initiating those body movements, but because of the delay in the response from the slave robot. So this altered sense of agency has been seen in people with schizophrenia. And it's how often people with schizophrenia attribute their own actions onto other people. And that often leads to paranoid delusions. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of people with schizophrenia claim that they feel a presence, which is kind of interesting. So it's a disturbed sense of agency. Like, they're not doing it. Somebody else is.
Are the parts of the brain similar between schizophrenia and this motion, tactile?
Yep. Mm. And it's a mismatch between sensory signals and motor signals that could be contributing to what they're calling alien presences felt by people with schizophrenia.
You said earlier
meaning that, alien just by not
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I think the other, we don't take it as extraterrestrials. Yep. You need to be careful. So, in this podcast, that probably means extraterrestrials, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Either.
Okay. So,
well, but like you asked, like the explanations for like what the presences are that they feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, like depending on, like I said, what your culture is, like the sleep paralysis thing in the United States, a lot of time it's alien abduction.
Yeah.
Because
for sure. That's for sure culture.
Yep.
That exploded, started out in the 60s and with Betty and Barney Hill, and then later just exploded and everybody was having any kind of head pumping. So I wonder if, do we do that? Do we control or direct those kinds of experiences through our culture? In other words, is it after the fact? After you've had the presence, you just, you culturally decide whether that was a ghost or an angel or something evil or an alien or an extraterrestrial alien or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
do we always culturally do it? Is it after or is it?
Or even during.
Is it during?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Because you're processing through the rest of your brain and the rest of your brain. Yes. If you're really into aliens, extraterrestrial aliens, then you're gonna experience that as an alien.
I think so. And your brain is probably primed to
for sure.
come up with that explanation.
You mentioned earlier that there's the tactile feeling that people, they somehow make them not be able to feel the joystick.
They got rid of like the pressure.
Okay. Because I wonder if people, are you more likely, are you more prone to it under anesthetic where you're like, if your hand is anesthetized or something like that, or your body is, but you're awake or something like that, would you be more likely because you are sort of disembodied because you can't feel things? Would that be a situation where you might be more likely to have it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
know
either. Like
when your hand's asleep or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
Maybe.
But there's all kinds of
your hand falls asleep, you sleep on it, you cannot feel it. It's completely numb. Mm-hmm. It doesn't last that long. You have to shake it and everything like that.
Yeah.
But there's a time for where you can touch things with your hand and you can feel it.
Yeah.
That's weird. But I've never had a sense of presence during my hand's asleep.
But, you know, there's also the phantom limb thing.
Yeah.
And there's even the, even in people who are born with a missing limb, mm-hmm. they still have phantom limb syndrome. And they still, because they think the brain... we're born with a mapping of our body inside of our brain. And it's the way our bodies are obviously supposed to be because of our DNA or whatever. And so if for whatever reason, you know, you're a child born without a left arm, that left arm is still mapped
in your brain,
in your body map, in your brain. So they will still have feelings or senses related to that missing limb.
Which kind of sucks because if you have to be born with a missing limb, you'd like to not have ever felt what it's like to have a limb because you don't miss it.
Yeah.
But now you miss your missing limb because of your stupid brain.
Yeah. And if you have, let's say you have like really bad, because lots of times it will hurt or it will itch or something.
I've heard that.
And they have found, I don't know, I read about this or heard about it somewhere. You know how when we went to that Museum of Illusion in Denver and mm-hmm. you split your body on a mirror?
Yeah.
And so we can only see both of our left arms or whatever, depending mm-hmm. on where we are. Somebody with phantom limb syndrome does that. So now it looks like, oh, my left arm is there. Let me scratch it. And it helps. Because their brain then detects it as that, you know, there's that arm that, of course, it's on my little brain map or whatever.
So what you're saying is that museum should let limbless people in for free, I feel like, to help them feel like.
It's not really hard to get a mirror in your home.
Set it up like that. It's tricky. Those were some weird stuff. The placement was very precise for some of those things.
Well, this feeling of sensed presence that we have been talking about is rather common.
Mm-hmm. I've never had it. I'm angry.
You have?
Sensed presence?
I can't believe you haven't.
No, I've never had there's someone in the room with me. I'm sure there's someone. Absolutely not. No. Like you said,
never,
you sleep, like someone walks into the room or something like that, and you say, I know someone's walked into the room. It's not a sensed presence thing.
But I've also had it where it's not scary because I'm not trying to fall asleep or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even think of it like an exact situation, but I know I felt it where I'm in a room and I feel like somebody has walked into the room and I turn around and nobody's there.
And I'm separating it from the two instances of sleep paralysis that I have. I'm saying that's different than that. Where someone's at the, gosh, God, it feels like someone's here with me. I've never had that.
Wow. I've even done it like where I'm sitting in the family room and I go, who's here?
Really?
And
you're having it right now.
And I
oh my God, Carrie. Describe it. Describe what you're feeling right now.
And I turn around because I think somebody's walked into the kitchen. And I turn around and nobody's there. Yeah. Huh. I can't believe you've never had that.
I guess that part of my brain is just too buttoned up. It's perfect. That's the only thing I can think of.
Or maybe I'm literally sensing ghosts and
that can be true too.
Something's really there. Yeah. I just can't see it.
So have they formally theorized this could explain a lot of supposed ghostly encounters?
Yes, okay. I think so. Because
the researchers have said, we think this explains ghostly encounters or some of them.
I mean, kind of, not, you know, I don't know.
They're usually not writing about that stuff, but if they were going to popularize, I mean, this is an obvious explanation for a ghost. And like I said, that's why I teased at the beginning, what we talked about at the very beginning, is that to the degree that the part of your the ghost culture of a mm-hmm. given culture or society is just this idea of someone with you, like your ancestors' presence with you. It could be explained by that because you know you've experienced, most people have experienced it, as you just said, except me. And yeah, so they're aware of it, and you know, they yeah. know. Like you'll see, like mediums sometimes will say a thing, oh, your grandma's right there next to you. She wants to ask you a couple of questions. But yeah, first, tell me what letter comes into your mind when then I'll guess her name. So what I have a problem with is the visual parts of things like that, where a ghost is, yeah, or even the audio parts, right? Where you hear, you know, whatever, the proverbial chains rattling, like that yeah. ghost we just talked about last time with the chains rattling, the groans and the rustling silken skirts and things like that.
Yeah.
That sense presence would not explain that, correct?
Yeah. Okay. No, I don't think so. And also, like, Charles Lindbergh was hearing. So yeah, he felt their presence, but he was also having auditory hallucinations, I think. That's obviously
clearly a full-on hallucination.
Which is also induced by the sleep, circumstances yeah. that he was in.
22 hours awake.
But then the other thing that I've read about these experiences people have, if there is like talking, they're hearing people talk. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, like later when they're recounting it, they really can't remember what anybody said.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, that does, that's interesting too, because remember, again, from the story we had last week, yeah, about Hinton Ampner, yep, she felt like, I think some of the her servants as well, the felt like they were hearing these conversations between two men and a woman, and they felt like they were very audible, like in the next room, but they couldn't
understand it.
Didn't have no word was, yeah, they couldn't say, okay, they are talking about, they have no idea what they're talking about, or couldn't even identify any words, just that people were talking.
Yeah. This seems more like it's a little bit different. Like they understand what's being said at the moment. Mm-hmm. But it's later. Hmm. It's kind of like they forgot it.
But that implies that they really didn't understand what was being said at the moment, because that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't know that the Charles
forget it.
The Charles Lindbergh one, it was like they're discussing navigation problems,
so
they're kind of reassuring him. Yeah. And so I don't know.
Just keep going that direction toward the sun. You'll get there, yeah, buddy.
I mean, who knows? But Charles Lindbergh, not a reliable narrator,
just
maybe.
Just because he's a fascist doesn't mean he wasn't a reliable narrator. I'm sure that happened.
Well, more than half of patients who suffer with a head injury without loss of consciousness go on to experience a sensed presence during the year after their head injury. Hmm. I don't think I've had a head injury.
Head injuries do a lot of bad things. They can also make you a terrible, terrible, you know.
But this is head injury without a loss of consciousness. So,
still,
these seem like not super bad ones. But, I mean, you can no, still get a concussion.
Head injury.
I know that's true. I've never had a head injury as far as I can remember.
I've had head injuries, but not in so bad.
Yeah.
Not so bad where I have sense presence.
Yeah. Well, it's also common, like I said before, with people with temporal lobe epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And very interestingly mm-hmm. enough, rest in peace podcast, mm-hmm. the presence that they're perceiving is 90% of the time the opposite sex.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
That is like doesn't make sense. My earlier theory about it's some kind of a
self
coordinated yeah. to themselves.
Yeah.
Huh.
And these people usually describe it as not pleasant.
Hmm.
It's distressing, and in some cases, it triggers depression. Hmm. And then some ascribe a religious
yes.
tone to it.
And well, again, that's going to be also,
they consider
that's cultural.
It, yes, a religious yeah. experience. So exactly.
My guess is the depression and that kind of thing is not so much cultural. That must be something really happening in the brain. Because that doesn't make sense. Why would you think, oh, if this is sense presence, you wouldn't go, there wouldn't have such a large percentage would, it would trigger depression and negative feelings. Why would that be true? I don't
yeah.
think that, so that tells me that part of it is
yeah, maybe.
Innate. That part is in the brain, not in the culture.
Yeah.
From the brain, not from the culture. I wonder if it has, I wonder if there's a preceding variable that it causes both those things, possibly. There's something happening in your brain that's causing that depression, but it also causes that sense presence effect. And you're associating the two, even though they may not be, the causation could be something that is causing both.
Yeah, I really
That's a theory.
Who knows?
That I just made up just now.
So now, you alluded to it being very hard to study people, like brain activity in people that are having these things, because how do you how do you make somebody have it when they're connected to electrodes?
Well, I meant specifically sleep paralysis, because that's people very rarely have them, even though everybody has one, or most people do.
There was somebody, a woman, who 2 years before this, she was being studied, she had suffered a bad head injury in a car crash. And so now 2 years later, she's undergoing routine neuropsychological tests, and she's having the electrical activity of her brain is being recorded by an EEG, an electroencephalogram, you know, when they put the thingies on your head, because she had reported experiencing sensed presence incidents since her car accident and her head injury. So in this case, while they're doing the EEG, so recording the electrical activity in her brain, she experienced a sensed presence while her brain activity was being recorded.
That's lucky.
And here's how she describes it. It began with a feeling of an electric shock in her right hand, and that was followed by her arms and hands feeling icy cold. Then vibrations went through her body before she experienced the feeling that a man was in the room with her, even though she was actually all alone in the room. So when they looked at the EEG scans, it showed that a burst of electrical activity, similar to that in somebody experiencing an epileptic seizure, occurred in her left temporal lobe at approximately the same time that she reported the sensed presence on her right-hand side. So, I mean, these researchers for 20 years had been, you know, assessing hundreds of patients who had reported sensed presence, but this was the first time that, you know, they were ever able to actually see that something was happening in somebody's brain. Okay. I mean, you know, they could surmise based on, you know, epilepsy and knowing what happens during an epileptic seizure and all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So when I asked you a while back if you had any descriptions of people who experienced them, and you said, no, I don't have any of such descriptions. You actually did indeed have a description because you just read it.
So yeah, but I think that one seems very different to me.
Yeah, I know. But
for some reason.
Well, I mean, how would you describe it? You you're in a room, you know you're alone, suddenly you feel like something's in the room. Is it usually like, uh-oh, I feel foreboding, someone's in here and I know no one's in here? Or is it like, oh, I must have missed someone. I didn't see somebody walk into the room. Hey, who's there? Is it more benign?
It can be both. And I think it really depends on the situation. When I'm lying in bed and my husband's out of town, it's the foreboding. When I'm sitting on the couch in the middle of the day and I think somebody just walked in behind me, that one's no big deal.
But I wonder, okay.
And it's not auditory because obviously I didn't hear anything because nobody's there. Mm-hmm. And you know how if somebody is staring at you, you can feel it?
Mm-hmm. Well, we think we can, but
it's kind of the same. And it's a real thing.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's kind of that. It's along those lines. Mm-hmm. I think our bodies just, I think we can kind of feel things. And
that's weird.
But sometimes it goes awry. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The sense presence makes sense. This internal psychological, physical brain logistics going on there, but feeling someone staring at you doesn't make any sense. That's from another. There must be some cues that we're picking up and don't realize you're picking them up.
Correct.
So like everybody, you know, intuition is just experience and subtle cues that you don't realize, and that's why you feel like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm right. That's what intuition is. It's not something mystical and something psychic. It's a very real thing. We just don't understand on the surface of what's really happening. I suspect maybe something like what you just described is we can see somebody, feel someone staring at you is probably something like that. Because otherwise, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I think some people think it's like evolutionarily, like, you know, when you're in the cave or whatever, if you're going to survive, you need to be able to sense the presence of a threat.
That's
so it's like the hypervigilance thing.
Yeah. So maybe it is extrasensory in a very real sense. Mm-hmm. We just don't understand that sense yet.
Yep. So yeah, they're saying, I'll read this to you. Experiences of presence as threatening can be linked with notions of hypervigilance mm-hmm. and threat. And this one is talking also about hypnagogic experiences, probably with sleep paralysis, can be related to feelings of vulnerability in a near sleep experience, because you're very vulnerable when you're falling asleep.
For sure.
And so if you're in the cave and you're falling asleep, you need to be able to, you know.
So interpreting them as something to be aware of and wary of makes evolutionary sense. If there's something in the present in that cave with you, you should think of it as a threat until you know it's not. It's a cave lion until you know it's, you know, your friend from the next cave over who just wanted to borrow a, I want to say skin, a pelt.
And the sleep paralysis part comes in, like, you know, when we go to sleep and we dream, our parts of our brain kind of deactivate or shut down almost when we're going to sleep. And so, like, that's why you're paralyzed, because when you're actively dreaming, so your body doesn't go flailing around when you think you're trying to escape a saber-toothed tiger or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when you wake up, the opposite process occurs. When
we've talked about
your brain wakes up
on the show,
but things get out of sync and they don't happen. So it's
it's
all
you
very
wake up
normal.
Before you're, the paralysis part has gone away.
Correct.
That's what sleep paralysis tip is, and it's
So
but a sense presence. If there's any, I guess, is there any evolutionary? It's just that sounds like it's just a hiccup. It's a glitch in the matrix. It's not something that's evolutionary.
Evolutionarily.
I'm not going to say any of those. I'm not going to say the word evolution yet. I no longer believe in evolution.
Well, I'm going to talk. I'm going to give you another little story. Okay. It's along the mountain climber guys. Mm-hmm. This is May of 1916. Ernest Shackleton, Frank Worsley, and Tom Crean reached Stromness, which is a whaling station on the north coast of South Georgia. They had been walking for 36 hours in very bad conditions, trying to reach the rest of their party. Three of their crew were stuck on the south side of the island, with the rest stranded on Elephant Island.
Mm-hmm. Just for the listener, Georgia Island is South Georgia is an island near in the Antarctic Sea area, very, very, very cold climate.
Yes, this is a trans-Antarctic expedition.
Got it.
The rest of them were stranded on Elephant Island. So to reach the whaling station, the three men had to cross the island's mountainous interior with just a rope and an axe. That it was like very few people have ever attempted this journey. And by reaching Stromness, they managed to save all of the men left from this ill-fated Imperial Trans-Antarctic Expedition. So these guys, Ernest, Frank, and Tom, and probably the other guys in their thing, they didn't really talk about it at the time that they were experiencing this. But after, you know, everybody's all safe and warm, they all three reported an uncanny experience that they all felt during their expedition, that there were actually four of them, not three people on their expedition. The fourth person,
Doug,
was just the silent presence of a real person, somebody who was walking with them, walking along with them. And but this presence went as far as the whaling station, but then didn't go on. Shackleton was deeply affected by the experience, but didn't really want to talk about it. And he considered it something, quote, which can never be spoken of.
Why? He thought it made him seem
maybe weak or crazy.
Huh. Yeah. They all felt it. It'd be interesting to know the genesis of how that started. Hey, did you guys feel as I did?
Like, I know.
Or did someone say, and the other two, you know, acquiesced?
Maybe.
I don't know. Who knows?
But for Shackleton, he was disturbed by it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's interesting.
But he admitted it. So these things.
So that's almost a folie à trois, in a sense. They are they just all independently? had sense presence experiences at the same time. That's I guess they're undergoing the same physical depredations.
And it seems like it might be a common thing in those kind of mountain climbing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Situations.
Extreme hardship, extreme fatigue, and all those things, and probably sensory deprivation.
So there is somebody, I don't have his first name, but it's Geiger is his last name.
Hans.
We're gonna go he Hans. Had was interested in the third man. That's what that basically is. It's called the third man phenomenon. And so he tried to track down people who have stories of the third man thing, and he's written a book. So one of the stories that he has is of Ron DeFrancesco, who was a worker at the World Trade Center on 9/11. And Ron was on the 84th floor of the South Tower when the second plane hit. And he, you know, everybody, he was trying to make it down the stairwell, but he was forced to lie down to avoid the fire and really thick smoke. And then he said he felt something grab his hand and lead him out because he couldn't see. And he was the last person to leave the South Tower before it collapsed. Obviously, nobody. Actually, it wasn't a real person who grabbed his hand.
Are you sure?
He came down alone.
I think it might have been Donald Trump.
Oh my God.
He went 84 flights up to save Ron.
So they say the scientific explanation behind the third man thing range from biochemical reactions to misfiring brain activity. Adrenaline. You know, who knows? But it tends to be under extreme circumstances. It's not a hallucination in the sense that hallucinations are disordering. Third man syndrome tends to be very helpful, and you know, they're like orderly guides. And in third man syndrome, they tend to be considered guardian angels, guides, or even sometimes Jesus-like. Yeah. Figures have been reported.
It's John Geiger, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. So in Geiger's book, here I have his name, John Geiger. In his third man stories, he has stories from mountaineers, sailors, and survivors of terrorist attacks, the 9/11. But they all involve a strong impression of a felt presence. Sometimes there is a voice or even a shadow-like image, but never a clear form. And it's usually extreme physical conditions. Your life is threatened. And also social isolation seems like triggers for the feeling of a presence, which then because of the situation you're in, you often feel it. There's like a spiritual or a guiding purpose to it. It's also, I think, a problem in when it has to do with isolation with like prisoners and, you know, like a... What's that called when you're isolated?
Isolation? What do you mean?
No, like you're stuck in the hole. What's that called?
Solitary confinement?
Solitary confinement, yeah.
Oh, so people in solitary. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. It can be from extreme situations or, a complete lack of sensory input.
Yep. So also
or
that's...
near lack.
Yeah. These are like life-threatening experiences where somebody has it, but... You can also experience it in a little bit less dramatic situations, like after your spouse dies or something. People have reported sensing the presence of their deceased loved one, like that, just that they're in the house. Like they're not sitting next to me talking to me, but they're just in the house. They're upstairs. They're, you know, your husband's in the garage tinkering with his tools or whatever. In those situations, you don't need somebody to save your life, you just need a little bit of comfort, I think, and so to make you feel better.
Not just even a benign self-presence, but a positive sense presence.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully.
Yeah, we hope. Oh my God, I thought I got rid of you. Leave. That would explain a lot of ghosts, because most ghost experiences are typically, it's very often family related, like I felt my grandma there or whatever. I wonder if they could explain even the visual ones too, because I feel like someone's here. My grandma died a year ago, whatever. And so you have a more visual hallucination.
Because you know what,
and see what you think you should be seeing.
I don't know.
That still wouldn't explain all of them. I don't buy any stretch, obviously, but it could explain some others.
But here, this was an interesting story, and this was related by a young woman on TikTok. She was in a really bad car accident with her husband, and she just remembers, like, you know, like yelling for her husband when, you know, the car stopped rolling or whatever happened. Mm-hmm. And then she remembers being pulled out of the car wreckage by a young woman, you know, like who put her arm, you know, put her hands under her armpits and pulls her out of the car, you know, gets her clear of the wreckage and everything. And then tells her, her name is Amber. She's a nursing student. And, you know, she's kind of helping her because she said she's like spitting glass and, you know, all bloody and stuff. And is talking to her and saying, you know, like, help is on the way. Keep talking to me. Keep talking. You know, what's your name? That kind of stuff. And then the next thing she knows, she's like in the hospital or the ambulance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, can I meet Amber? Where's, you know, the young nursing student who rescued me out of the car? And her husband's like, what are you talking about? There was no woman. A man pulled you out of the car. There was nobody named Amber. There was no nurse. Mm. And
can I have a better ending for that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amber was a nursing student at that hospital, Carrie, 27 years ago when she died.
Or she was a...
murdered.
Yeah, she died in a car accident right there.
Oh, my God. She was on her way to work.
Yeah.
And ever since then, she's been helping people out of their fiery cars whenever there's an accident on Turnpike 49. I don't know what that is. So that's...
And her husband also said... What are you talking about? You were screaming my name. You were screaming bloody murder. You weren't, you know.
I would have thought that she was able to scramble away from the car herself, and she just felt like someone was helping her, and that helped her find the strength to do it.
No, I think what the thing is, she was not conscious.
Oh,
Or maybe she was only semi-conscious, and, you know, and although her husband said she was screaming his name, so I don't know. Mm. I don't know exactly.
Maybe Amber, the ghost nurse, was asking her, what's your husband's name? And she was screaming, Ron. Yeah. And then let's make this Amber, the ghost nurse, please.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very weird. So, I mean, basically, if your sensed presence is going to be your guardian angel and save your life or
that's
help
a good
you
thing.
Escape a burning building or that kind of stuff, I think it's good. Honestly, I think it's amazing what our brains do to help us through stressful situations or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's not really but you know what I mean?
My take on this is that it's a glitch, not an adaptive response or anything like that. It's not purposeful.
I agree.
It's a glitch, a little glitch in the part of that brain that affects these things. And it manifests as this feeling of this sense presence. And whether you then take that as a positive or a negative and causes depression, or it's just completely benign, or however you interpret that is then your brain interpreting this thing that you can't otherwise understand and explain.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's Amber, the ghost nurse, who to this day is still helping people from car crashes.
I think Amber could have been a ghost.
I think Amber is a ghost. I think she's still doing it. I'm sure of it. I want to go to that area and get in a car wreck and see if Amber, maybe I could fake a car, but she could be pissed if you did that. So I'm not going to
I don't know. I don't even remember where that was, but I thought
well, thank
a,
you, Carrie.
That was a good story.
I appreciate your sense presence. It was spooky and ghostly, but also, as Carrie does, very sciencey.
I tried to make it a little ghosty at the beginning.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for that, since it is Hollow World season.
But I mean, like I said at the beginning, I tend to think what we, I'm meaning as human beings, when we think there's something paranormal happening, there is a logical, scientific explanation for it. And I think this is one such explanation.
I think usually, but I hope not always.
Well, I know. And that's why I told the Little House on the Prairie bonnet story.
Yep. That reference that everybody got over
no
the age of 60.
No glitch in the brain can make that bonnet.
That's true.
Appear under the floorboards of your airing cabinet, whatever
that is. That damned bonnet.
Yep. Well,
thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Next time we'll have a monster story.
Okay.
Okay. Until then.
Happy Halloween time.
Bye.
Bye.